Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, The Cultural Christ, we will explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our culture impacts faith. Now for part two of this interview. Let's talk Jesus. What were some of your first mental images of Christ? And I guess, how did you understand the ethnicity of Jesus, if at all? I've been asking everybody this question, and answers really are all over the place. It's wonderful. But yeah, where was your starting point in terms of understanding, like, culturally who Jesus is?
That's a great question, because the church I grew up with and grew up in Chicago, I don't recall many images of Jesus. And it wasn't until we moved into the suburbs and moved churches, and we were renting a building from a white church, where I was like, you know, you interact with that famous image of Jesus,
yeah,
who is sort of like blondish brown hair, but very fair skinned. And I think blue eyes.
Totally.
And then, right. And then that same image shows up in my house at some point.
Yeah.
But also not really thinking that much of it, because then there's the Sunday school Jesus, who is a cartoon, and those felt board stories, Bible stories. And of course, those were all white people with blue and green eyes and blonde hair, which was weird. And then the voice of God was Burl Ives, because we had these cassette tapes, stories of the Bible. And so in my head, God sounded like Burl Ives. And Jesus looked like this long-haired white man, maybe? I don't know. So I really didn't think that much of what Jesus looked like.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, Jesus in the church spoke Korean first,
yeah,
and then English. But the longer I stayed in vocational ministry, I would say the whiter Jesus got.
Gotcha. What has been your progression in understanding the historical Jesus, right? If the incarnation matters, then the skin color of Jesus, the ethnicity of Jesus matters.
Right.
And we all believe the incarnation is like central to a lot of components of faith and theology. So what has been your journey in understanding the historical Jesus, and that Jesus isn't white? Was it the Bible? Was it community? Right. What was it for you?
It was community.
Okay.
It was definitely community studying scripture together.
Ooh.
And realizing that a number of white colleagues had a very different impression of what scripture said, or who was saying it, or understanding the context of scripture. Because my understanding was the Bible wasn't written in English, nor did it all take place in the United States.
Yeah.
And yet our interpretation, understanding, and application was always within this cultural context, social location of the United States, which was already confusing to me. And, you know, on the surface could sound right, but doing Bible study as a ministry team, where we had white colleagues, Asian American colleagues, Black colleagues, Latina colleagues from different classes, different social locations, that is what really shook me up.
Wow.
And helped me understand that, yeah, the way the Bible is taught and is preached and studied has to be interrogated. Otherwise, we're just assuming that this is the way everybody does it.
Mm.
And it isn't.
Yeah. What I'm hearing, Kathy, is the Bible mediated through community discernment, and not just any community discernment, but diverse community discernment and interpretation, which naturally will challenge our assumptions, our biases, and whatever else we bring to the text. If thinking harder about things would fix our cultural biases, we would have arrived by now, right? Sure. If another book, right. if another degree. And so the embodied, and correct me if you phrase it differently, but the embodied practice of living in community with a diverse, safe group of people, in that you're living together, you're loving each other, it's something by safe. And then coming to the Bible, that for you was pivotal, correct?
Oh, it was absolutely pivotal and earth shaking. I mean, I loved and still love and miss, because I don't do it regularly anymore, that communal Bible study and the sitting down with manuscripts and colored pencils with the sole purpose of digging into scripture. And I can't not shout out a dear friend, co-laborer, and disagreement sparring partner, Sandra Van Opstel, who, with others, are teaching in the context of the industrial prison complex and learning from folks who are incarcerated, that even as diverse as we can get a community to study scripture on the outside, people on the inside are also going to see scripture differently. And so, you know, I'll read something that Sandra posts and I'll have to stop and think, because I think, oh, well, it's, I see scripture and she sees scripture in a certain way, because we are just living our lives out here in the freedom of living on the outside.
Yeah.
Again, I think that there are always going to be limitations to the kind of diversity that we find or create or cultivate. But if you don't have that, I think you're missing out on Jesus.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, we got to sit with that. It's powerful. So who is Jesus to you?
These days, Jesus is a traveling companion with whom I have a lot of beef with, a lot of questions and heated conversations with, about the state of the world or the neighborhood Facebook page. Yeah, Jesus is a sparring partner right now in a season of, and it's felt like a long season, Josh, of asking, like, what was that all for? You know, what was the vocational ministry time for? Or what was that book in 2018 for? Or what is this book, you know, from last fall? What was that for, when even in the midst of other Christians, we see Jesus very differently? And so, yeah, Jesus and I are still having a lot of tense conversations. And I'll be honest, I feel like there are moments where I'm like giving Jesus the silent treatment, because I'm just really mad. I'm really mad.
Yeah. Thanks for answering so vulnerably. That's a lesson to me. And it sounds like discipleship, it sounds like relationship. When we look at the first century Christ, he was in the midst of all of that with his disciples and the people that were in the different circles that he inhabited, coming in and out for all the reasons that we come in and out of these circles of spirituality and church. I do want to talk about church a little bit. What has it been like over the years wrestling with, you talk about all these challenges and issues, they manifest in the faith communities that we create. And then you overlay politics on top of that, makes it worse here in North America in particular. What does faith community look like and church look like? And I'm using the word church in a very open sense. But what does that community look like for you in this stage of your relationship with Jesus?
To be honest with listeners, and I wrote a little bit about it in Loving Disagreement, my husband and I, we've not been regular attenders of a physical church on Sunday mornings in several years. And in part because that practice was so harmful and so hurtful. And so now church has become a really loose, broad group of people with whom we have these spiritual conversations, not as regularly as we would like. And we are definitely at a place where we miss having that regular connection weekly with people who not just share common beliefs, so that's not it, but people we can have these spiritual conversations with and say things like, yeah, I gave Jesus the silent treatment, and that is understood and it's questioned and there's a back and forth about that. So we have friends, we have that community. Mm. We're just at a place where we wish that we could see those people physically in the same space more often. I miss that.
Yeah, absolutely. What does it look like for you to be you culturally in a space? I've seen you in a variety of different social circumstances, including the first time we didn't meet, but you were leading a breakout at a conference and I went in and it was wonderful. So seeing you in so many of these different spaces, where do you feel most at home culturally, where you feel like you?
I actually don't think that there are very many places where I feel like I'm fully me. In the privacy of my home, that's definitely one of those places. I think that wherever I go out to, there's always a level of hesitation and reluctance to be fully me in all of it, whether it's, you know, cultural as an ethnic background or culturally as a faith background. But what does it look like when I try to be as fully me? It is, if I'm speaking, there will be stories about skincare and food and community. Mm. And if it is in the context of leading yoga class, it is in my music selection. It is in the way I interact with the room. If it is in the written context, it is always kind of fully honest, and lately typing words in the Korean language for which I mean the Korean word. And so I think it is very, very much that. There is no more worrying about, do I smell like kimchi? Mm-hmm. I can't eat X, Y, and Z before this. Can I use this illustration? Can I write about this? I try not to carry that with me too much, because the world is already very judgmental. I don't need to carry that in myself.
That was incredible. The last 2 minutes is a start to a poem, by the way. What you just said is like really incredible, walking through the different components of culture and how it fits into you being you. So thank you for sharing that mm-hmm. with us. Looking at all the mid-20s, late-20s, the age of your kiddos that are searching for Jesus in faith and community, what advice do you have for them in their journey with Jesus and with those around them?
Jesus is not locked up in a church building or in Christian spaces. And Jesus is also not locked up in only Christian people, Christian voices, Christian art. That is actually something I'm still learning and have learned a lot from my kids as they have grown. The way they look at the world and engage with the world is not the way I was taught to find Jesus and to find God. And so that is what I would encourage. And I think folks in their 20s are already doing that, because that's why they're not going to church. That's why the church buildings have lost them. Has God and Jesus lost them? I'm not so sure that Jesus and God have lost that generation. I think the institution of the church has lost the generation. So I would say, you keep teaching us older folks to have a bigger imagination of Jesus and of what incarnation is.
It's powerful. So as we wrap up, I would love to hear about your writing as an author. If you could talk about the different books you've penned, what's forthcoming, it'd be great for those who want to dive into your story, your experience, your wisdom.
The first book project was many, many moons ago, More Than Serving Tea, a group of Asian American women, reflections on what we thought about faith and life. I was in my 30s when I wrote that book. That seems like a long time ago. And then Raise Your Voice, I wrote in my late 40s. I weave quite a bit of my ethnic identity experience, and it shows, I think, in the way I see scripture and write about it. And then Loving Disagreement, which is the most recent book that I co-authored with Matt Michalotis. It is an election year. I don't know what Loving Disagreement has to do with elections and politics, but I have a feeling that it would be really, really helpful.
Heck yeah.
And yeah, and I think I would say definitely with the last two, Raise Your Voice and Loving Disagreement, there is a lot that I write about in terms of my mistakes or the things that I've learned from. And I think that that is very much a part of who I am culturally and how I've experienced the world, which is what I have done, seen, expectations don't quite fit the way things are supposed to be. And so I'm okay with being fully human. I'm okay with saying, yeah, like I screwed X up and here's what you should learn from that. And so really these days we've been focusing on promoting that book and helping people understand as believers, we should not be running away from disagreement. We really should see it as an invitation and community to live out the fruit of the Spirit. Beyond that, I've been doing some writing just privately. I haven't posted anything. I haven't blogged it out. I haven't created a Substack. I do not know if I have the energy to keep up with being that kind of public writer anymore. Like everyone's like, it's the day of the blog is over. And I'm like, I don't want a Substack. Like, I don't want to have to migrate everyone, but I also am not sure that I'm done writing. I don't know if it's just for a Christian audience anymore, because I'm not sure I can stomach Christian publishing anymore.
Gotcha. Well, thanks so much for sharing. And I would encourage those who are listening to check out those books, especially one related to disagreements. And it is an election year, which is going to be bonkers, Hunger Games, ridiculousness, as it already has become. I do encourage people to pick that up. Kathy, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.